Hi, this is Dr. Linda Mental. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast of the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Our website is filled with more encouraging interviews, all accessible at myfaithradio.com. Everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, and I'm here along with my co-host, Chris Weigel. And every weekend, we're here, we're doing life together, and as always, we're just glad that you've joined us.
That's right, Dr. Linda, another Dr. Linda Show, another weekend. Great to be here with you. A little different room this week.
Yeah, we're in a new studio.
A little different studio,
we need to put that on Instagram.
Okay.
We have a picture. We'll put that on Instagram so people can see.
We've got
great
a
studio.
Nice new table, too. That's the best part. Well, I'm excited about today's topic because I believe it's going to help a lot of people, including myself, and I need all the help I can get. I haven't reached the preteen and teen years with my kids yet, but I really do want to understand the changes that come as a parent so I can be ready. And it's a given that most preteens and teens are moody and emotional and even at times unhappy. Their bodies are changing. And their hormones are surging like we know that to be. And they're moving from children to young adults. That's actually a really tough time. And Dr. Linda, you've parented preteens and teens. What was the biggest challenge during that time?
Well, first of all, you sound like you've been around a few of them.
A couple, yeah.
Probably
a couple.
In church, if people don't have tweens or teens, they've certainly been around them.
Right.
You know, believe it or not, Chris, I really like that age group.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like when I was parenting middle school age and high school age. Now, there is a lot of drama.
Right.
There's a lot of moodiness because, like you said, the hormones are changing. But it gives you, as a parent, a lot of opportunity to really coach your kids at a really critical time in their life. This is kind of where you're setting the stage for how they're going to deal with problems and work through problems. So I think the greatest challenge, not just for me, but for any parent at that age, is really having a connection with your kids and staying connected during a time when they're being a little bit more difficult. You know, it's the peers that they want to be so connected to, and yet the parents really have to not be upset by that and to recognize that they're still going to be the most important influence that their kid could get. So even though it doesn't feel like it at the time and they kind of push you away, you really are the most important person in their life.
Well, see, that's the thing with young kids. I mean, my oldest is 9.
Well, they're getting to the tween. We kind of think 10. We kind of think 10 is about a tween age.
Okay, well, they'll talk now. I can say, hey, what's going on? And kids will chat.
Yeah.
But I do fear when they turn 13 because I've had other parents say, oh, well, your kids aren't 13 yet. That's what scares me.
Yeah, and your oldest is a girl, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I found that when the girls get more towards 12, that starts to make that shift a little bit better. Mm. And boys, it takes a little bit longer.
Right.
So, well, listen, here's a few ways, just a few things to think about. And it was funny because when I was coming over to the studio, mm-hmm. I was listening to a piece where the Pope had said this. So the Pope was giving parenting advice about family meals.
Write this down.
And what he was saying is, he was saying turn off the text messages during the family. But he was talking about, it's true, family meals are really a great time to connect.
Mm-hmm.
So I get real concerned when I see all these families, you know, just doing the drive-through through the fast foods and not sitting down because of soccer and baseball and all the things that are going on. So I think having that family meal, that's a really good time to really create that bond with your kids. And then the one that would really surprise me was that you have all these conversations. Maybe you're starting to see this with your 9-year-old.
Right.
When you're sitting in the car.
In the car, yeah.
Yeah, side by side, especially with boys.
Mm-hmm.
So girls will look at you and talk to you face to face, kind of like what you and I are doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But boys do much better when you're sitting side by side. I think it's less threatening or something. And that's when you have great, robust conversations. So any excuse you can get to take them somewhere, and you will take them a lot of places when they're teenagers.
Definitely, yeah. Well, what's neat about a car is kids are interested in cars, whether they are a boy or a girl.
That's true.
And my daughters say, hey, why are you doing that? And then I've got a truck that's a manual transmission.
Oh, boy.
They are fascinated by that. How do you shift the gears? Why do you do that? And I say all of that to say, that spawns great conversations.
It does, but it also sounds like the making of an engineer, just FYI.
That's right.
And then I think one of the best times in terms of that bond is bedtime, because you really do have a chance to have some quiet talks. They'll kind of settle down. especially if you have a bedtime routine, that you try to continue a little bit. Now, when they get teenage years, they want to stay up way later than you probably want to stay up because their body clocks are actually different and they don't go to bed early. Hmm. That does change.
That is a legitimate thing.
It is a hormonal change where they, I think a study, I don't remember the study, but it was like they can't really settle their bodies down in their teenage years before 10:30 at night. And I remember, Chris, and look out for this, that they would come home from some activity and it would be like 12:30 at night and they were ready to talk. And Norm and I are like comatose at that point, but we're thinking, we got to keep this up. We got to do some conversation to keep that bond secure.
Why is it that tweens especially like to do a lot of negotiating?
Yeah, that's where the real frustration comes in. And it has everything to do with the fact that they're trying to figure out what their independence is.
I remember being this age and my dad said, look, you can ask me why. You're at an age now where you're learning. You can ask why. But there was a fine line between wanting to know why he was saying to do this, but then questioning his authority.
Yeah, so you might have tried to negotiate, but he was just trying to give you an explanation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is really important.
He still does
that. We're past the tweens.
Right.
Well, one of the things is that it's part of their job, and I think this helps normalize it when you think, they're testing you. They're trying to push the boundaries. They're trying to see what they can get away with because they really are trying to figure out who they are. So you have to think of it always like I'm providing the guardrails on this kind of rocky road that we're on. It's really important.
I would think the temptation would be to hover over and protect your preteen because you are, in fact, losing control, not negatively, but they are just simply growing up. And the power of their peer group is so strong.
It is. And so part of it is the identity issue again, where they're trying to develop their identity. And so you just have to let them kind of flex their muscles a little bit, not a lot. I mean, it goes with age. And when they do that, don't just rush in and try to overprotect or hover over. We've had shows on the helicopter parenting and all of that. It doesn't bode well for how they do. And the problem is it's uncomfortable for us as parents. We watch them. We go, oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. But they sometimes have to do that in order to learn how to do things better. So just be really clear about rules and expectations and responsibilities. And when they don't like the rule, just give a little bit of empathy, but don't give in. So you might want to say something like, let's use texting because that's a big fight with parents. You know, it's after 10 o'clock, they're not supposed to text. And so they go, you know, everybody else's parent, let them do it. This is a ridiculous rule or whatever they're going to say. And you simply just go, you know what, I know it's tough, but this is what we think is best. Just hold the line.
You know, I've heard some preteens and teenagers say some really terrible things, especially to their parents, when they're upset and they're angry. How do you handle that?
Yeah, they get really moody and they say things and they're not, you know, their brains are not fully formed. So they're going to be impulsive. They're going to react to things kind of in a negative way. So you just really have to help them do it in a civil way and understand that this is not directed at you. I remember when our kids were having meltdowns, it would feel so intense at the time. And then by the morning, they kind of calmed down. A lot of times our kids would apologize to us and tell us. And we kept saying, you know, as long as it's civil, you can be emotional, but you got to keep it, you know, in line because that's what we're trying to teach them to do as young adults eventually.
When you deal with preteens in this way, the temptation would probably be to lecture them because you've been talking to them like that their entire lives anyway.
That's really good because you're shifting now your parenting technique. And I always got so upset. I thought, you know what? I finally got this worked out, and now they're changing their development. I got to change my technique. So the better approach is just to ask a lot of questions to really get them to think. And sometimes sharing struggles that you had as a kid their age because they don't think of you like that helps too.
Right. Well, this is the Dr. Linda Mental Show on today's program, The Challenges of Parenting Tweens and Teens. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Are you a mom or a dad trying to do your best to raise a healthy weight child in an unhealthy eating culture? Do you often struggle with how to respond when your child asks if she is fat or if he needs to lose weight? Do you wonder what is normal and how do I best impact my child and his or her eating habits? Well, hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, and my book, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, teaches parents how to raise healthy kids in an overscheduled, fast food, video game world by making simple choices, easy changes, and instilling good habits that will improve everyone's life today and forever. Winner of the Mom's Choice Award,
Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World will give you this confidence, the confidence you need to take charge of your child's eating and raise a healthy weight child.
Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World. Available on Dr. Linda's website, drlindamental.com, and available online where books are sold.
Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Don't forget you can follow Dr. Linda on Twitter at Dr. Linda Helps and Facebook, Dr. Linda Mental, author and speaker, and on Instagram. And speaking of social media, living in the digital age adds a new dimension to parenting concerns. Dr. Linda, you blogged about this and mentioned a report about social media and well-being.
Yeah, this was an interesting report. It looked at the well-being of tweens and teens in this report. It was called Social Media Use and Children's Well-Being. And what they found was that just 1 hour a day, Chris, 1 hour a day on social networking was not a good thing. So they looked at the, if you're on social media, how does it impact the kid's life overall, like their whole sense of happiness and well-being. And for every hour, their well-being went down 14 percentage points. Now,
wow, that's considerable.
Isn't that a lot? Mm-hmm. Because how many teens and tweens do you know that are just on 1 hour?
No.
Like none, right? Right.
That must be a joke.
Yeah, and then think about the types of interactions that they could be having on social media when we consider, like, how many social comparisons there are, how much cyberbullying is going on. You know, there's a lot more stuff that they're being exposed to on social media that should have us concerned.
Well, here's a quote from that report. It says, "Our results suggest that spending more time on social media networks reduces the satisfaction that children feel with all respects to their lives," sort of like what you said a second ago, "except for their friendships, and that girls suffer more adverse effects than boys."
So that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? That girls are a little bit more emotionally involved with social media.
Right, because, you know, a boy gets called a name, he's like, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
The girls internalize that stuff a lot.
They do, so that makes a whole lot of sense. And so it affects all aspects of their lives, is what you said, not just a few parts of it, except the friendships, because they're probably feeling a little bit more connected.
Right.
So I think parents listening out there, if you're a grandparent or a parent or you're a teen or a tween, you know, spending time on social media reduces your satisfaction with life. So that's something that we have to think about, and parents have to think about ways. And I'll tell you, this is a challenge. This could be one of those second challenges, finding ways to limit their use of social media. But if you do, you're going to improve their sense of well-being.
It's tough, too, because parents like to use social media.
Yeah.
So, well, Mom and Dad, you guys sit on your phones all day. Why can't we? So we have to set an example, too.
Yeah,
that's tough.
That is hard. So they, you know, it's like the old saying, they learn by watching you and see what you do, not what you're telling them to do.
Right. Well, let's get practical and give some parenting pointers. I would think it starts with being a role model and monitoring, like I said, your own use of social media.
You do that? Have you monitored how much you're on social media?
I don't even want to, because I think I might use it a little too much.
Do you really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to cut back on it, because I found myself, this is what bothered me, I found myself first thing in the morning checking Facebook rather than reading the Bible. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe that's out of balance.
Probably.
So we got to be good role models.
Yeah.
That's going to be the important part.
Dr. Linda, should you explain your monitoring of their social media so there are no surprises? Basically, tell them what you're doing, why you are watching.
I think so. Now, they're not going to like it.
No.
So here's the thing. But if you tell them ahead of time so there are no surprises, and I think you need to get passwords to certain sites and tell them that, you know, the Internet is just not a free ride, that you're going to go anywhere you want, that you're going to tell them ahead of time that there's going to be random checks.
Right.
We're going to put some parental controls on here. And especially the younger they are, the more you need to do that.
I know you feel that parents should set specific guidelines for the use rather than anything goes. But, I mean, you've talked to many parents who feel overwhelmed with how many negative sites there are and how easy it is for their preteens to be exposed to these sites.
Does it scare you that you have a son and that at the average age of being exposed to pornography is 8 years
old? That's unbelievable. Well, then the things you look at, they just pop up. You can't help it. It's on Facebook.
Right.
The ads on Facebook are terrible. I'm thinking, I don't want my daughters to ever have a Facebook account.
I know.
They will see this stuff, too.
That's why they do have age limits on those accounts, but I think a lot of people don't stick with those age limits.
Right.
This is the bottom line of this. You have to stay up on what's trending and what's popular, what your kids are looking at, and do spot checks. You need to Google sites that you see if you don't understand what they are. Parents are so surprised when they sometimes Google a site and they find out, oh, my goodness, this is what my child is looking at.
Right.
Now, we used to do this, you know, we had one media device to deal with, and that was TV. We'd monitor it. You know, we'd look to see, are they watching MTV or right. some show we didn't want them to watch. Now they've got iPads and phones and gaming systems and more, and it does feel overwhelming, but bottom line, you gotta be up on things.
Right. Now, that's stuff that's being fed to our kids, but how do we educate our tweens on what they are posting, the stuff that they are putting out online? That's got to be just about as hard.
Yeah, and again, you know, their brains are not fully formed, so they're not thinking mm-hmm. about, you know, if I put this on out there, it's going to be there forever.
Right.
I think we talked a long time ago, Chris, on the show about a teenager who, one of his girlfriends sent him a really sexy picture, mm-hmm. and it wasn't good.
Right.
And she was doing that over and over, thinking that she, you know, he was the love of her life and didn't have any guidelines. And he took all her pictures and put them on a DVD and sent them out to the entire football team.
Mm.
Kids don't think, once I post that, it's permanent. And that these kinds of postings or pictures I'm sending to somebody could be used to be made fun of or humiliated. And so I think it's really good to take examples of things that people have done, like that teenager, and say, this is what this child did, and this is where this went. Because it's really hard to delete things once they get online. And
right.
kids just aren't thinking long term like that.
You know, one of the guidelines that I like is a tech-free zone. And it's times or places in your home where you have to imagine this. Look at each other and talk face-to-face.
A lost art.
Right, yeah. It just doesn't happen often.
Yeah, and again, we're concerned that our kids are losing their emotional intelligence because they're not doing what you just did, which was to look right at me and have that face-to-face contact. So I think the best place you can do that is at family meals. We used to have a right. basket. You drop the cell phone in the basket, and it's a tech-free zone. We did that at night sometimes when we would have family meetings, too. So find a place, get a place where you say, no technology, it's talking, because we have to practice that.
Maybe there's a way to scramble phones. Turn the scrambler on during dinner, and no one's phone will work.
No one will right. yeah.
Might be the only way to accomplish that.
Sometimes you have to turn them on buzz so you don't hear them ring, but that's a true. Lot of times they're buzzing in the background, and everybody's like, I want to answer.
Well, Dr. Linda, you and I often talk about how important it is to involve our children in out-of-school programs, athletics, that type of thing. And that requires live interaction and communication.
Yeah, and that's the best way that you can reduce tech time, right? If you just
right.
take them and you put them on a playground someplace, or you put them in an athletic, or you get them involved in some kind of school program, and then you're developing leadership and discipline and teamwork that, again, is going to help prepare them a whole lot more, and they need it at that age.
Right.
I just can't stress how much they need to be talking to people at that age rather than talking to a device.
That's the thing about on-field and or even on stage or in a band and a choir.
Yeah.
You can't text each other. You have to communicate right there face-to-face. And when we're talking about tweens and teens in this age group, what about noticing their mood changes?
You know, this is so critical. You're going to have to look at them on a daily basis. It's just one of those things you're going to have to watch. Are their appetite changing? Is their mood changing? And mood is going to change, but is it more intense than normal? Are they not eating well? Are they not sleeping well? Are they seem to be isolating? Just check them out.
Right. Well, these are great pointers and guidelines to help our tweens and teens with their mental well-being related to social media use. Stay with us as we continue our conversation on the Dr. Linda Mitchell Show.
The other day I was cut off the road by a driver. Everything in me wanted to yell, "Hey, watch out!" But I restrained myself, knowing that yelling at the driver would not do so much good, and it wasn't the best way to deal with my anger. Anger easily rises up in most of us. Anger, while a natural emotion, needs to be dealt with in the right way. The Bible tells us, "Be angry, but do not sin." So what is the biblical way to handle anger? Well, this is a question I answer in my short and easy book to read, Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness. That small book has sold over 130,000 copies because of how practical and helpful it is to everyday living. So if you want to be angry but not sin, practice what Scripture teaches. Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness is available on my website, drlindamental.com, and online where books are sold.
Letting Go of Worry by Dr. Linda Mental, available on her website at drlindamental.com and online.
So glad you've joined us on the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Today our conversation is about how to encourage our tween and teens' well-being. And Dr. Linda, we've got to talk about spiritual well-being in this last segment.
Well, Chris, we know that teens and tweens who are connected, we've talked about that, to their parents, mm-hmm. also need a connection with Jesus Christ. I mean, right. you and I are part of a church that has a very active youth group. And those kids, to me, are absolutely amazing.
They are fantastic.
Aren't
yes.
they?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you impressed with the
yes.
depth that you can get with these teenagers?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So this is the really the critical factor is they're not going to be perfect. They're going to make a lot of mistakes. They're going to be tempted like everybody else. But if a tween or a teen, just like the two of us, if we have the power of Christ living in us, that is going to make such a difference. And it's going to contribute, again, to that sense of well-being, because we know that kids that have faith have a much better adjustment in life. So it takes a whole lot more than programs or activities, which is sometimes where the church can focus.
Right.
You've got to meet your child's spiritual needs and then minister to them as well.
Right. I've heard some shocking stats about how many kids muddle through church, and then as soon as they're out of the house, they don't go to church anymore. Let's talk about what is important to teens in terms of church. And I think to start off, teens want to feel safe when they participate. They want to feel safe in debating, asking questions, or sometimes they just want to keep silent and worship and not necessarily discuss out loud, but take it in when they are in that youth group setting.
Yeah, I think if you have a youth group where it's safe, like you're talking about, mm-hmm. it's gold for those teens.
Right.
They also like to ask you these sort of in-your-face questions. And they give answers that sometimes are really difficult for the adults who are leading the group. You know, there have been times when I've worked with a teen group where I've said, you know what, let me think about that. Yep. Let me search the scripture. Let me get back to you. Because those are some tough questions that they're asking.
You know, growing up, my youth pastor never was... He never felt challenged by the kids in the youth group. He didn't see it as an affront or a threat. But you're right. Teens will challenge the message. But he didn't take it that way. He said, this is an opportunity for them to learn what we're trying to do here. And he was a champion at that.
So he wasn't the reason you turned out the way you did.
No, it was not his fault. That happened after youth group.
Okay, that must have been it. Well, listen, they also want to be challenged to take action mm-hmm. on what they believe. So this generation, I think, particularly really wants to do something. So it's not enough just to say, I like this idea. They want to go out. They want to do something. And I have found, again, these teens to be just awesome when it comes to service
right.
and helping other people.
You know, according to churchleaders.com, in terms of what teens want in a church, they want to meet Jesus because in their mind, otherwise, why are we here?
And do you think, Chris, that we've been so sort of focused on programs and fun mm-hmm. and entertainment?
Yes.
That sometimes we miss that fact that they really want to meet Jesus.
Well, see, if I could go back to our youth group, we didn't do the big, you know, celebration club, decorate the room up like a hangout, you know, type thing. Our youth pastor was so ahead of the game. We actually enjoyed going and learning the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, we did the praise and worship songs and all that, but it wasn't a club to go hang out. We can do that at the YMCA.
That's right.
He had us dialed in like this, like we're saying here. We wanted to meet Jesus. Otherwise, we can hang out somewhere else.
Well, and I do remember, too. It's funny what we're remembering about our youth group. I remember those deep spiritual experiences that I had with my youth group
right.
where people were really moved. And I remember seeing other kids really praying and even crying and crying out to God. So meeting Jesus is important. They also, according to that churchleaders.com site, said that they want to be able to somehow take their faith from something that's just kind of shallow to something that feels really personal. And if you think about it, this is the time in development where they're trying to take what their parents taught them mm-hmm. and make it their own. So they're trying to figure out, rather than this list of things I have to do to be a Christian, they're trying to figure out, what does it really mean for me? Let's move beyond those do's and don'ts, and let's see if somehow the relationship with Christ is much more important than just the way I behave all the time.
Right. Don't we have to help them through their doubt and have courage to discuss the hard questions?
Yeah, and again, I think we just need to think developmentally. And that's, I keep going back to that, because the development of where they are in terms of trying to figure themselves out, they're going to do that by asking you lots of questions and not being sure of things. And I've heard a lot of grown-up people tell me that if they could have just asked a lot more questions and talked about the doubt that they had when they were kids,
yeah.
rather than being shut down about that or feeling like they just had to say a bunch of platitudes, that they would have done better. But, you know, they're in good company when they're doubting. Moses doubted. Job doubted. Thomas, he was called Doubting Thomas, right?
Mm-hmm.
God was not intimidated by any of those people's feelings. He wasn't intimidated by Moses' feelings, Job's questions, or Thomas doubting. After their season of searching, each of those people in the Bible had a new and a deeper understanding of God. So that's where doubt takes us when we actually pursue it.
You know, when it comes to having tweens in church, when the kids know that having adults who actually care about them, when they know they're there, that is so important.
It is. And they can tell if you're investing in their life and mentoring them on the right path. Again, I've been told by so many adults that you know, if they don't get adult attention, they're thinking, what's the point? I'm not worth their time. They need adults who genuinely care. If you can be one of those adults in a tween or teen's life, you're going to touch them probably for a long time.
You know, teens yearn for belonging, and we talked about this earlier. They will find it somewhere, hopefully
right.
Church.
Right.
When they don't find it, they'll do stupid and damaging things in order to feel like they belong. How about if they were given a place to belong before they even came through the door?
Yeah.
Our church and our youth group should be a place where any student can be at home.
That's right. And they also like to serve. We mentioned this before, but it's always amazing to me the bad rap that they get when they're willing to go on mission trips and boot camps and all kinds of things to really serve one another.
Yeah, this one seems critical given our culture. Teen culture is one of tearing down and destruction. If you listen to kids talk just as they hang out, they jokingly insult each other.
They do.
It's part of the culture. And our church and our youth group culture should be one of building up and encouraging.
It should. And then teens are going to want to come if that's the case. And the last point we want to make, because we're running out of time here, is that I really do believe that our teens need training in apologetics. Today's teens, they're just bombarded with philosophical and scientific opposition to Christian beliefs, whether it's in their science class or the teacher is railing against anyone who believes in creation. The philosophy professor tells a freshman class to prove the existence of God. Most Christians are really unprepared to provide logical, coherent, well-examined reasons for their belief in Christianity. So when these teens are faced with opposition, they have to be able to defend their faith and have some answers, and so we really need to help them that way. So as you can imagine, from all the things that we're talking about, Chris, this is a roller coaster time of parenting. The teens' emotions and the tweens' emotions are all over the place. The drama comes in, but I just want everybody who's listening to remember how important parents and caring adults are to their growing development. Pray for them. Take time to talk to them. Allow them to question and wrestle with the difficult questions of faith. And most important, anytime you have the opportunity, introduce them to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, because that's going to be the very best parenting strategy of all. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Many thanks to our producer, Norm Mintel, our engineer, Chris Weigel, who is also my co-host who makes this show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.